Part 29, Chapter 3. A few feet from the door of the conference room, Johnny started to get mad. War. Any one of those lords in there, or their governments, merely had to say the word, and their fleets pranced off to bash somebody's head in. And when they'd bashed it in, they could just sail off, tra-la, without a thought of what they'd done to people's homes and lives, and then maybe come back another day to bash some more. Johnny took a walk around the causeway of the bowl. It was a sunny noontime, and the mine entrance and exhaust fans made a gentle breeze as they changed the air. The little children lay in the rifle pits, shaded with bits and pieces of cloth. They followed him with their eyes. The dogs whuffed and snuffled at him from the ends of their leashes and, somehow recognizing him as a friend, wagged their tails. The older children, having fed the younger ones, were sitting cross-legged and eating from bowls. They grinned and nodded as he went by. Johnny thought, why shouldn't these children have a chance? Why couldn't they have a future that was happy and safe? War. What right did cold, impersonal nations have to murder and rampage, to smash and crush and gut their more helpless fellow beings? Call it national policy. Call it necessities of state. Call it what you will. It still amounted to an action of the insane. Cyclo. What right did Cyclo have striking this planet down? Couldn't they have bought what they wanted? Couldn't they have come in and said, we need metal, we will exchange this or that or technology for it? No, it suited them better to murder and steal it like a thief. He thought about the time before the visitors came, when first they had been free from the oppressive tyrants. The people had been trying to get on with it, had been happy, had been working with a will. And then the visitors came, and with them, the bank. Organization might be necessary, but it gave no one the right to create a government that was an inhuman, soulless beast. He thought of Brown Limper and his idiocies in the name of the state. Yet Brown Limper had been almost sensible compared to those lords in there. Johnny looked at the children, and he made up his mind. Whatever happened, there would be no more war. Not anywhere. He had been so engrossed in his thoughts that Chief Chongwan had to shake his arm to get his attention. The chief was jumping up and down and waving at Johnny to come on, and at last practically pushed him into the ops room. Tinny was beaming. A chatter of Polly was spraying out from around her headphones. She said something into her mic and turned to Johnny.
It's the Scott officer in charge of rescue in Russia,
said Tinny.
They spotted some green smoke coming from a ventilator in Puffs. Somebody inside had gotten the armor off the ducks. They've got mine hoist gear going right this minute, hauling people out.
Minute by minute, the reports came in. Then Tinny turned to Johnny.
It's Colonel Ivan. It's for you. He says, tell Marshal Johnny the valiant Red Army is still at his command.
Johnny was about to reply. He was finding it hard to talk. But Tinny said,
here's another one for Johnny. He wants to hear your voice.
She pushed the headset at Johnny. Security or no security, the voice said,
Johnny? It's Tom Smiley Townsend.
Johnny couldn't talk.
Johnny, the village people are all okay. Everybody is all right, Johnny. Johnny, are you there?
Oh, thank God.
Johnny forced himself to say,
tell them that for me, Tom. Tell them all. Thank God.
And he sat down in a chair and wept. Thank God. He had not realized how worried he had been about them. He had suppressed it with an iron will so that he could work. The reports were still coming in, and after a while, he got busy. They wanted to know where to go, and he, in his turn, had the glad news for them of the departure of the enemy and the terms. And shouts and cheers began to leak through from the background of the communicator's voice there. They had 5 wounded pilots and a lot of burn cases, and they wanted help from Scotland. He learned the old underground hospital in Aberdeen had been set up, and he got the badly wounded ones flown through to it and pried a nurse loose in Aberdeen to be flown back to Tashkent to care for the minor burns and injuries. He had gotten so busy with these problems that he had forgotten all about Sir Robert until Dries Glatten got Chong Wan to remind him of it. Johnny had been avoiding it a bit. They had not yet succeeded at Castle Rock, and he knew that trying to pry Sir Robert loose was going to take some doing. He had even wondered whether he couldn't get Lord Faljapan to put off the signing a day. Sir Robert was going to be a handful. Even so, he put the call out and got busy arranging for all prisoners to be put down at Balmoral Castle, about 50 miles to the west of Aberdeen, easily found from the air because of 3 noticeable peaks nearby, because of a river, and because it itself was a prominent ruin. It was only about 50 miles from Aberdeen on a road that was in fair condition, but Thor said he could pick any up in a marine attack plane and get them to the hospital at Aberdeen if they needed it. Johnny gave him some precautions and then went out and got the Hovin emissary, who seemed to be the contact now with the orbiting fleet, and gave him a trace map so he could transmit it to the Hovin commander. They said they could do it this afternoon, without waiting for the final signatures. Nobody knew how many prisoners there were, but they'd be flown down in different launch craft. Johnny left it up to them and to Thor in Scotland. Doing all that had given him a pretty distinct impression that things were very hectic around Edinburgh, and he was even less inclined to call Sir Robert. Once more, Dries Glatten got Chong Wong to push him. Good Lord, those small gray men were anxious to get Sir Robert here. He finally persuaded communicators up there in Scotland to track down Sir Robert, and when he finally got him on the radio, every misgiving he had had was fully justified.
Come down there!
Sir Robert had rapped back via communicators, and so far as it could be translated and relayed, he told Johnny off properly. Didn't Johnny know that there were 2,100 people in the various ancient shelters beneath the rock, if they were still alive? That heavy bombs had smashed in every possible entrance? They had gotten atmosphere hoses drilled in here and there, but who could talk through those? The rock cliff sides had been pulverized and shattered so that every time they got a drift going in, they had landslides. Yes, Dwight was there. Yes, Dwight had gotten tunnel casings from Cornwall and tried to drive them in. Did Johnny think they were all standing around doing nothing? It was all right for Johnny to be sitting around with those la-di-da lords drinking tea. Go right on and drink tea, but let people get on with this... It took Johnny half an hour to impress on Sir Robert that without his signature, the matter of the visitors wouldn't be ended. Finally, with considerable blasphemy that the communicators couldn't handle well in Polly, Sir Robert said he would pry a pilot loose and fly down. Johnny sat back, feeling exhausted. He didn't like to fight with Sir Robert, and he could understand his position completely. His Aunt Ellen was in those closed-off shelters. And Chrissy. It was all he could do himself to sit here handling things when he felt he should be up there, digging with his bare hands if necessary. The small gray man looked very pleased when Chong Wan told him Sir Robert was coming.